I'm into the Buddha. I'm into the Dharma. I'm into the Sangha. Good morning.
Good morning.
There's more faces here than I expected, and that's a good thing. So, the title of this talk is Discovering Home. And this idea of home has been a koan for me for a long time. And I will explain that in just a moment. The little blurb that went out in the e-bulletin, for those of you that get that, says there are many doorways to practice. We enter through them day by day, moment by moment. Often we are confronted with a challenge or a koan. What happens when we pass through one of those doorways and find ourselves home? So at the beginning, as we start looking at this question of home, I want you to stop for a minute. I want me to stop for a minute. And think for a moment about the house that you grew up in. What state was it in? What did it look like? How many rooms did it have? Who lived there? What was the neighborhood like? Now shift slightly and think about what is your idea of home. When you hear that word home, what comes to mind? Is it that house or is it something different? For me, it is something different. I grew up in a series of homes, a series of apartments. We moved every year, so I always had a different home. And so when I think of the house that I grew up in, I don't know which one to pick. There was always some sense of transition and upheaval and unsettledness, and I didn't really have a sense of home. I had a sense of, well, this is where I live now. And it changed. It changed every year. But when I think of the word home, when I use that word home, what comes to mind is a feeling. Something is evoked, a sense of place, a sense of acceptance, a sense of security, a sense of family. Even though I don't have a particular family member that jumps out into my head as being part of that. So home means something, even though it doesn't necessarily mean the place where I grew up. And that's gonna come into play here. So the dictionary definition of home is a residence or a refuge, or an emotional state of comfort or refuge. We say home is where the heart is. Home is where you hang your hat. And often it's a place that triggers a sense of self-reflection, like we're doing right now, or it's a place where we can put some of our identity. Where we grew up is important. How we grew up is important. The place we lived is important for who we are right now. And so it plays a part in unfolding our sense of who we are. And it shows up a lot when people start their practice and they start looking at who they are. Who made them who they are? What impacted who they are? So this question took on a very specific form in the fall of 2011. I went off to train somewhere else. So after training here for several years, after ordaining here and making a commitment to here, I went off somewhere else. And I went away for 3 months to a different monastery in a different state with different people and a different teacher. And part of what I took with me was this question of what is home and how do I make this practice sustainable? How do I do this practice in such a way that I can do this long term, day to day, hour by hour, year by year, and make that sort of a commitment that I had wanted to. And so when I went there, I kept a journal, which is something I usually don't do. I'm not a journalist. I don't put a lot of value on recording my own thoughts. But for this particular 3 months, I decided that was what I was going to do, because I really wanted to see what happened when I went somewhere else to train. And so I arrived at the beginning of September, and I stayed for 14 weeks. And I arrived at the tail end of a hurricane, and the power was out, and they were running their kitchen on a diesel generator. It was very loud. This was up in the Catskills of New York. It was very beautiful. But I got there and was jet-lagged, and after the first weekend, I arrived at the beginning of a weekend retreat. At the end of the first weekend, I remember going back to my little cabin and going, oh my God, 13 more weeks. I just have 13 more weeks. I can get through the next 13 weeks, and then I can go home. And then I read through my journal last night. This is the first time I had done it in probably a year. So I arrived on September 2nd, I believe. And by September 19th, I had written, I have fallen in love with this place and the people here. How has it become home in such a short time? Is this what home leaving is? That wherever I am is home? And then right after that, we went into a week-long sesshin. And as soon as sesshin was over, I had written, sesshin was glorious. Something shifted early in the week, and this place now feels like home. And when I had gotten there, I was really struck by how familiar a lot of this was. What being a resident in a monastery was like. It was familiar to me. I had been a resident here for 5 years already. I knew how to follow a schedule. I knew to show up for my assigned work practices and kitchen cleanups. I knew to get to the zendo on time. All of that was very, very familiar. But then there are things that were very, very unfamiliar. Their forms were different. And different in subtle ways. I could follow along, but I had to pay attention. And so there was this odd balance of being able to sink into this place that was strange to me, and really having to pay attention to what I'm doing. And it was little things. You know, they pick up their sagu with their right hand instead of their left hand, or they do their bows angled to the altar instead of at right angles. And just these little things made me stay on my toes. They kept me on my toes. And working with a different teacher was, that was tricky. I've had 12 years of practice with Kyogen. I can walk into Sanzen, and he can judge my mood by how I hold my head. And walking into a Sanzen room at another monastery with a teacher I don't know, and yet not feeling like I really wanted to explain every single thing, it really made me redefine how I ask my questions, how I approach Sanzen. There, Sanzen was mandatory. I didn't have the option of saying, yeah, you know, maybe next time. It was, the bell rings, your line's called, you go. So I really had to step up, and I really had to work on creating a relationship with this other teacher that I didn't know. And I liked him. He was a good guy. But that Sanzen relationship was really tricky for me. And that was one of the things that stood out as, what is this? So I stayed there for 3 months. And something shifted as I had gone through my 3 months. I was mostly assigned to the kitchen, which was also familiar to me, but I wasn't in charge, which was wonderful. I got along with the cook really well. But going back through my journal by November 10th, so this is maybe 2.5 months through my 13-week stay. By November 10th, it said, and for the first time since I've been here, I'm ready to go home. I'd like to return to the Pacific Northwest where I speak the language fluently. So something had shifted, and all of a sudden, home was Dharma Rain again. It wasn't this other monastery that I was so comfortable. What in the world is that? And this is the wonderful thing about practice, is we can catch ourselves doing these things and go, what is going on? I get to this new place, and it's wonderful. I'm ready to embrace it. I'm ready to pick up its forms. I'm ready to bow to what it asks of me. And a couple months later, I'm ready to drop it and walk away. That's a very curious thing for me, and a striking one. Because I do feel like Dharma Rain is my home. And it's important for me to say that. It is easy for me to speak of negative things. It's easy for me to criticize or be judgmental. Sarcasm comes naturally to me, and I learned it early. And I have a fear of speaking of things that I value because I am afraid that people will discount it or that I will be judged as being too woo-woo spiritual, or somebody I admire will say, oh, that's not important, and therefore I'm not important. So it's very hard for me to get up here and say, this is important to me. This is something I value. But I do value this. I do value Dharma Rain for many, many, many reasons. And it has occurred to me that I have stayed here longer than anywhere else. I have lived here in residence longer than any one place ever. I have committed to practice here for more years than both of my marriages combined. And that amazes me. There is part of me that says, what in the world am I doing? This is scary. This is risky. Making a commitment, oh my God. And I've taken vows to stay here. I've taken vows to do this. I've taken vows of stability and simplicity and service that says, be here. Make this home. And so it brings up this question of what does it mean to make a commitment in a mobile society? We move from job to job. We move from house to house. We change around our families when parents get divorced and remarried. Half-sisters are born. Stepbrothers move in. Nothing is constant. And yet, for a place like this temple, it becomes a place of constancy, even though it changes all the time. It becomes a focus where we can turn our attention and anchor our practice. As an ordained person, traditionally we're called home leavers. In most societies, a monk would leave their home to go to the monastery and train. They would leave behind society to step into a new role and a new form. You leave behind what came before, and you step into a new life that is structured and bounded by vow and intention. And yet in America, our society changes and moves around, and so many of the ordained that I see stay in one place. So we take vows here of training for, you know, I've promised to be here for 5 years, and my intention is probably to be here for much longer than that. At Zen Mountain Monastery, they take vows to stay there for life, so their monks don't go and wander about. They make a commitment to this place. I will be here. I will make my stand. I will take my seat here. Whatever life brings, I will be here. So when you hear those words, what does that mean to you? When you hear somebody say, I am staying here. I will be here to support this temple. I will be here to support you. For me, saying it has a very steady, strong, powerful oomph. And I hope I can live up to that. Because I am human and I know my own karma, and I know I can get spooked and scared and run and cry and say, oh my God, this is all too much for me. But there's an intention, and that intention helps orient me towards practice. And I see it orient you towards your practice. So it brings me to a question of, how is this temple home? How is this temple home for a spiritual practice? How is this temple a home, not only for me, but for all of you who come here, who stay here, who commit your time and your energy and your finances and your intentions to this temple, to this community? And I look at it and I say, well, what makes the temple the temple? Not only home, but what makes it this place that I think of when I think of Dharma Rin? Because when you hear the words Dharma Rin, something comes into your mind. So what makes it that? Is it the teachers? Is it the buildings? Is it the community? The programs that we offer? Is it the fact that it's here on the corner of 25th and Madison? Yeah, I did a class a couple of weeks ago out at the Sandhi Sangha on the skandhas, and we looked at the skandhas as a way to examine what a functional human being is. You have form, sensation, perception, formation, consciousness. You need all of those to make a human being. And you can use maybe not those same skandhas, but a similar idea to think, well, what makes the temple? What makes Dharma Rin? Is it the teachers, the community, the programs, the buildings, the location? Maybe not any one of those, but all of them. Maybe. Maybe not. And part of why I've been thinking about this is we're thinking about moving. We're going to build a whole new temple in a new location with different buildings and different grounds. And some of our teachers are thinking about retirement someday, if we ever let them. So when we move, what will make the new place Dharma Rin? Will it be the buildings, the grounds, the community, the teachers? We've got a whole crop of teachers growing up. So maybe our abbots can retire someday, knowing that they're leaving the temple in good hands. When I think about moving, sometimes it's a little scary. It's not going to look like this, and that is scary. It's not going to be what I know. What is it going to be? Am I going to have my needs met? Am I going to know what's going on? Am I going to have a place there? But when I stop and think about it, when I think about what makes this temple home to me, and when I think about what is going to make the new place home to me, a lot of that fear, at least for me, dissolves. Because I know whatever we create will be home. It will still be Dharma Rin. We will still have our traditions. We will still have our community. We will still have our teachers. And it's still home. We have a Sangha member, I've told this story to a few people, that will come into the Dharma house at odd times to study. She knows the temple schedule, and she's very respectful of that and doesn't interrupt anything. But when she needs the space, and she needs the quiet, and she needs to focus on what she's doing, she'll come over and hang out in the library for a couple of hours and study for a test. And I love that. I love that the temple is so permeable that people can come in and out as they need, and that they don't just have to be there for a meeting or for a class, that it can be a resource for people other than coming for a formal practice session. And I like having that openness and that easiness between lay life and formal temple life. There's a blend there. And there's a blending between lay practice and monastic practice. There's a blending between the formal schedule and an informal easiness of coming and going. And I would love to see that continue as we go into this new property, however it happens. But just to have that easy accessibility of in and out between all of the members of our community. And I know, you know, some of having that fear of change dissolve comes from seeing that we've already changed so much from when I started practice. And I only started practice in 2001. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, knowing how long some of you here have practiced, 12 years isn't that long. And we have already grown and changed so much. And I have watched this Sangha grow up so much. And believe me, when I started off, this place did not feel like home. It was scary. I had Shisei come up to me every Sunday morning and say, "Hi, Catherine, how you doing?" And just to have somebody talk to me that I didn't really know was just... But I'm glad he did it. It helped me find my way here. So for me, and I realize I'm talking a lot about my own personal practice here, but I think it's important to share that with some of you, all of you. Actually, I am sharing it with all of you. Growing up without a real sense of home, learning to relate to this place as home was vital. It is vital. As we come to practice, a lot of us turn towards looking at old karma and what makes us who we are and what our triggers are. And where we get stuck. And for me, there is so much fear about lack. There's so much fear around not having resources. That learning to find that I can do that here. That I've got resources here. That are actually independent of the fact that I'm in robes. So just take the fact that I'm in robes out of your mind right now. But that there's a community here of people who can see you. There's a community of people here who see me. I have relearned what home means from all of you. And it is such a precious gift that you show up, that you help out, that you bug me sometimes, and put me in a position where I have to say, yes, I'm being irritated, but I will go along with it anyway. There's a sense of family. And through this, I get to see glimpses of something greater. Little glimpses of... seeing those little glimpses of Buddha nature in all of you, I can think that maybe I've got some too. I have a hard time seeing that in me. But I can see it in all of these faces out there. I can see it in all of you. So I love my family very much, and I miss them very much. I haven't seen them in a while. I know they're probably going to listen to this talk, so I want to make sure that they don't think I'm discounting them. I do love them, and they have formed me, and I am very grateful for that. But I learned something different here. You know, I am not living for myself and practicing for myself. I'm doing this for all of us. Not you, but us. All of us together. We all make this home. We all make this sangha. We all make this mandala. And from this, using this temple as a locus, using this temple as a center, it makes it easier to take it out into the world. It makes it easier to take it out into those places that are not home. So think about that for a second. If we think about what home is, what is not home? For me, it's the grocery store. I'm not a big fan of the grocery store. But I've learned to see people. And I've learned to, I don't know if any of you have ever been in cash and carry, but they've got those big unwieldy flatbed carts and big boxes of things that don't always slide through the aisles, right? But I can go through cash and carry, and I can look at people and apologize if I bump them or crack a joke with one of the cashiers. And then cash and carry, too, becomes home. Safeway becomes home. The post office becomes home. Not because I live there, but because here I've learned that home is wherever I am, And so we have a roof, we have our teachers, we got kids across the street, that's a part of home, yeah? So I get to borrow people's kids from time to time when they lend them out. And it's important to me, and I think it's important to all of us, whether you come through the door for the first time, whether you've been here for 25 years, 35 years, 39 years. It's important. It's important to me. And I want to say thank you for that, to all of you. To the lay teachers, to the ordained teachers, to the disciples, to the people who have taken the precepts. Because in all of you, I see a reflection of what's important to me, and it's so hard for me to speak to what's important to me. But I don't always have to say it, because I see it in each of you, in the precentors that show up at 6:30 on a Wednesday morning. It means something. So, I think that's all I have to say on that for now. It's sort of a short talk. So any comments or questions, I'm happy to take.
Thank you for your talk and your candidness. And I think that's the most I've ever heard you say in one time. But you speak very well, and I really appreciate what you said. For me, I'm just on the opposite end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I have a very busy schedule. I don't get a chance to participate in a lot of the evening right. events because I'm working then, or I'm working during the day, or I'm doing something. I have a very busy life, but yet on Sunday morning, I make it a point to be here. And it's strange that for me also, even though I'm not a resident here, I spend very little time here, it still feels like home to me also. It's like I can come in here and I can just take a deep breath and feel relaxed that I'm really among people who accept me. And sometimes I almost feel embarrassed because I don't really feel that spiritual. Yeah. I mean, my life is just the opposite of the typical Buddhist. My interests are so different, it seems like. But yet I still feel like this is my home. And there's something not just about the place, but mm-hmm. it's the community. Mm-hmm. It's the only place I've ever been where I could feel that I was completely accepted for who I am. It doesn't matter if I'm gay or whether I race cars or do all these things that make a very large footprint in the world. I'm mm-hmm. still accepted here. And so I understand what you feel about being home. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think if we can keep doing that, keep seeing people as they come through the door and offering that sense of acceptance and ease, then I think we're on the right track.
So I, my wife and I lived overseas for about 6 or 7 years, mm-hmm. and we counted over a 4-year span. We lived in 12 different houses.
Wow.
And what happened was is the whole idea that a home is a place fell away quickly, and it became more about the people that we're with and the rituals that we had as a family, and that carried with us, and it kind of didn't matter what the shell was that we were living in. And so as we've come back here and settled in a little bit more, we've kind of found that to be true as well.
So what are some of those rituals that you use to make wherever you are home?
Meals, dinner, uh-huh. and weekend outings, typically.
Nice.
Nighttime stories.
Excellent. Sharing food is such a wonderful thing. Thank you.
That was a really lovely talk. It touched me a lot. I've only been in this Sangha for about 4.5 years, but I was thinking about that. I've been other places longer, but in this 4.5 years, you know, two people that I was close to died here, and how much I was touched by that and how much I miss them every time I come. And it's definitely the people for me in the community here that has made this feel like home. And ever since the first Sunday service I came to, there was just a rock-solid feeling here. I know sometimes you talk about the solidness of a meditation. It was sort of like you could feel that solidness of the Sangha. It was very evident. And so I'm here for the people.
Thank you, Suzanne. Dharma is important, too, and Buddha. They're part of this, too.
Yeah, I was also very moved by your talk, and I also can resonate with some of the, you know, feelings of misgivings or fear what's going to happen in the future, and I think it's true that there's all these different elements that come together that make a home. It isn't maybe even one single thing, but, you know, certainly the people and their intentions and what they actually do, and the location is not irrelevant. I mean, we couldn't necessarily make our home on Mars, you know?
Yes.
So all these factors are relevant at different levels, and I do also feel a certain sense of fear or anxiety maybe about, you know, will we be able to do it, this move, and so on. I think you're right in the end. I think that the fact that we have this community and these intentions, that's likely to be the deciding factor. But thank you so much.
Thanks, Joshin. I enjoyed your talk. I really like the imagery of pulling up my childhood house, which is right down the street on 18th and Washington. And I had the opposite experience of you, where I lived there my whole life. And my father just sold the house a few years ago. So I grew up there with my three brothers, and that's what I pictured, and went to Buckman Elementary School and all the schools in the neighborhood. And I live really close by, too, up on 45th in Washington, which is funny that I still live here. But when I was thinking about going away, where I've tried to live other places, the thing that kept, you know, being grounded here in Portland and living here in that house has been very grounding. I thought of it as a sanctuary and a refuge, and my brothers as, you know, my safety net, that I wouldn't be alone. And we would go off to, you know, camp and things, and it was scary, but I always had one of them with me. And so I'm not as close to them as I was when I was little. They're scattered, but I have new brothers and sisters in my community, and definitely this is one of them. And definitely have, I feel like Dharma Rain is a sanctuary and a refuge for me. And wherever it's going to be, wherever Dharma Rain ends up. And that's been super important to realize for me, because it took me several years to join. So I'd left CCO and Great Vow kind of like, you know, in a feeling of, I don't really, this isn't really my family.
It takes a while to earn that trust or to build that
trust. It does. And so it's been years. It's been, you know, I've been sitting with either one of the groups for like 10, 11 years now. And it was scary when I heard that they were moving, because this is my neighborhood, you know, that we're moving. And but I'm embracing it, because we're all doing it together, and it is, wherever we are, is our home. And I'm glad that you brought that back to light, because I was getting hesitant about how much do I want to participate. Well, I want to participate a lot, because it's my family and my home, so... Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-oh. Thank you. Offering a little balance here, lest you think Dharma Rain is this bastion of sweetness and light. I want to say something about refuge and home. I mean, home is where some of our most intense conflicts are, because we care, and we're deeply committed to things. We value them highly, so the amount of investment is high, and conflict or butting heads, the stakes go way up, and we are not without that. I think what is important to me is that I can trust people to do that honestly. I can trust people to do it as practice, to look deeply, to let go of what can be let go of while holding on to what is important, that we listen to each other, or we try. Sometimes we don't hear as clearly as we might. But I've found that the people that in my life that I may have known for a long time, but those who are close to me in any way at all, I have been irritated with at some point, and I have had conflict with at some point. And those are my friends. Those are the ones I know. We get through the other side. We're real with each other. We can have those moments. And so that is like a family as well. Mm-hmm. And I would hope people will understand that that's the nature of any real Sangha, and that my trust in the Sangha is probably more soundly based on that. I mean, I shouldn't surely enjoy the other, but the solidity of my commitment to it, or that's not the right word, my trust in it is based on that.
Like you, I moved a lot when I was growing up, and I didn't have any one place. And you know, whether I liked it or not, there was a lot of change and transition. And it's really unsettling to pick up and move. That place that you call home. So I really commend you for going to another monastery and practicing in an alien environment. So I'm wondering how did you work with that change and transition, and how did you practice with that?
The transition of going to New York. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to watch, because I had a really strong part of me that said, I've been here long enough, it's time to move. Because I was so used to that. At least once a year, if not more, I'll rearrange the furniture in my room just because it needs to get mixed up. You know, there was some nervousness about going to a place where I didn't know a soul. There was some fear about how am I even going to get there. It took a couple of planes and a subway and a bus and about 24 hours of travel time to get there. I had never been to New York City before. Oh my God. trying to get through the subway with three suitcases by myself. I got there and I was a wreck. I mean, I was jet lagged for probably 4 days and couldn't track anybody's names, and it was just deer in the headlights. Tell me where to go, I don't know what's going on. But I could trust that I could do that, that it was okay to do that, that I could show up and just say, steer me. And I could trust that they would point me in the right direction. So it didn't, that getting ready to go to New York wasn't without its stressors. Hurricane Irene was in full effect right before I went. And the place was flooded, and once I got there, they were still inviting community members in for meals and showers, because they had hot water when most of the community didn't. They had electricity when most of the community didn't. And it was a very sweet thing to see them opening their doors to their neighbors that way. But it certainly had its fretful moments.
Yeah. thanks for the lovely talk. And
thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for not hiding. And it's, I guess, I want to talk about not hiding. You know, just about everything people have said this morning resonates with me as to, you know, how I find home here. The biggest thing for me, which is something that, you know, many of us have probably felt at some point, is that the home I grew up in and the family I grew up with, it wasn't always safe to be undefended and really fully open. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always safe to be undefended and really, you know, just let your guard down and, and, you know, just be able to trust that other people would be, you know, respect that and also be letting their guard down too and not being defended and not holding back. And I think the ability to, to talk about pretty much anything and just not have to really hide anything is so valuable. And I especially appreciate the way our ordained membership lives so publicly. I mean, that's that is a big part of what makes me feel safe just being myself here, is to see others being so openly themselves. So thanks.
Well, this talk was really about Sangha in relationship to Sangha in relationship to the temple, but you know, I made that joke that the Dharma and Buddha are part of it too, and those really, I didn't speak of them, but they show up so much. I mean, our Sangha wouldn't be our Sangha without our practice, without our study of Dharma, without our investigation of Buddha nature, without the teachings that have come down to us over the past 2,500 years, and without the willingness to pick up these traditions and these forms. I mean, if you say, wow, I want to be part of a community that's loving and accepting, but, you know, I'm not going to come to service, I'm not going to bow, I'm not going to do the zazen. You know, that which we do and that which we study really impacts how we relate to each other. So those three treasures are all intertwined and they're all so important. So I feel like I spoke to one part of that, but not the complete story. But I liked your comments that it drew the attention towards practice and towards Dharma. Thank you.
Well, Joshin, I want to suggest that home will eventually disappear in a very deep sense, and that all the homes that I have known, some of which have treated me well and some of which have not treated me well at all, they will all eventually disintegrate and pass away. And especially does this get scary when a situation like our moving to a new property kind of creates this energy of truth around that possibility, for me, anyway. Mm-hmm. But it also, as I've tried to stay out of the storyline of it and just stay with the energy of the passing away and what might be created, I find that I have a huge amount of confidence in what might be created there. And I think it's all a part of the possibility of passing away and the eventuality that nothing is permanent, even home. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about what is home, I think about it as that with which I'm willing to be intimate. You know, if it's here or if it's at the grocery store, if you just do it in the moment or if you do it repeatedly by promising to be there and showing up. That's what I want to suggest, that home is that intimacy and that connection and that willingness to be together.
Mm-hmm. What a wonderful way of putting it. Thank you, Bukai. I think I appreciate that you pointed out the passing away in addition to the looking forward to something new. I tend to look forward a lot. But I also really appreciate the passing away. I remember the other day we had a dialogue with the evangelical Christians, and I remember Kyogen talking about the ephemeral nature of things, and that everything passes away, and yet because of that, we can appreciate them so deeply when they're in front of us. And so in thinking about this new property and getting excited about what might be, and setting aside my fear of, oh no, what will it be? There is such an appreciation for what we have right now. I love these buildings. I love these people. I love what we have here. And it will pass away, and I will mourn for that. But I also know it'll be okay. So thank you.
Have time for maybe two more?
You're raising your hand for yourself.
I am. Had to get my attention. So I had a lot of anxiety about the idea, especially hearing that we were looking at rental properties and potentially moving very soon, although I think we've stepped back from that.
Yeah.
Raised a lot of that grasping that I have of this place as a refuge. And the story that I went to that was very helpful was the story of Nyogen Senzaki and his floating Zendo and the realization that the Dharma happens wherever it happens, and that there's something about this place that's indestructible and doesn't, you know, have a place or a location. And also the realization that we could destroy this place here, that is, it could end here also. It doesn't have to move somewhere else, and that allowed me to loosen my grip a little bit.
Thank you, Dojin. You've been involved in a lot of this, haven't you? Yes.
Dojin, thank you for your talk. I have a lot of just different thoughts that are coming up. One was when you asked us to think about our home, our childhood home. I did live in my house for, you know, till I was 17. But what came to me in a moment was this kind of spacious, timeless feeling that made, that was the memory, the emotional memory when I was thinking. So that's kind of interesting when I think about Dharma centers. And for me, I do have a question about home, having been part of a different Sangha for 15 years, and going there and feeling like home and family. But also, at the same time, having this sense of I need to do the next thing, or I this isn't home anymore, and it's safe and it's warm, and there's been lots of experiences of this deep trust, refuge, spaciousness, timelessness through different retreats, and but that sometimes it's time to move on. So that's a question for me. Like, when is it then just becomes a certain stagnancy, this warm, cozy feeling?
Yeah.
I know that's not the whole picture. And being here, marrying Sosetsu, and he has been here for many years, and having children right away, and not having been able to really participate in the same way that I did at my other Sangha, where I just kind of could get involved in everything, go to all the retreats, and have those moments of intimacy, deep intimacy, without words, that just comes from sharing this practice together. I feel like it's taken me longer, and I have more questions about, is this home, or... But reflecting back on my time here, I do feel that the times where I felt the deepest sense of home in this particular sangha is having done a little bit of sesshin, or having it just through the practice, and then it's just there during the other activities. So I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, I think it's a great way to approach it, a little bit at a time, because you learn for yourself to trust it. You learn for yourself that it is something that you can find intimacy here. And I think if people jump into a new sangha and just say, here I am, they're wonderful, they're great, and not really carefully look at what they're getting involved with, I think it's easy to have some regrets later. So I appreciate that, one, that you still enjoy your old sangha. It's the wonderful thing about family, you don't have to be loyal to only one.
Hey.
You can, if parents are divorced, you can love your mother and father equally. You don't always have to pick one, hopefully. But I think coming to a sense of family and coming to a sense of intimacy with a group does take time. And I certainly appreciate your willingness and engagement with this sangha. And
I'd like to offer one comment.
To paraphrase an old saying, for me, home is where the hara is. And that's really very true. Where I am centered is that it's got that spacious, universal place. It's not a place except in my interior landscape. There's a centered place. I've been through change of location as well. I was in a monastery for 10 years, and it was really clear, this idea of moving on, there was something else I needed to do on my path, and it was timed to make that step. And that sense of being centered in my practice as we changed cities and came to Portland and had a new small community to work with, being committed to being fully centered where we were was really the essential thing. And I think that being intimate with the moment makes it possible to really connect deeply with what is nearby and connect with it. And that, it's, I think sometimes people err too much on just wanting to have that unattached centeredness without encumberment. But to be fully present in the matrix that we are living in is the other side of it. Because it doesn't really function and manifest until you're engaged in this mandala and taking your place and allow being in it is an important part of it as well. And it could all change. So there's two sides to it, sort of the real and the apparent, or the absolute and the relative, however you want to put it. It's important to have both and to know which side you're turning toward and expressing and living in at any moment.